have two parts today. Number one, I want to finish what we started on last week in chapter 30 of Shmuel, this division of the spoils and what it is that David is trying to accomplish and his men are opposing and why are they opposing it and what is driving David here. And then I want us to have a pre-Purim shiur. And it'll be about the mitzvah of Shalach Manos, of Mishlalach Manot. So everyone has the source sheet? Okay. And the learning today is dedicated by Janine for the yard site of Sidney Kuhl, Shmuel ben Yechiel, Zichrono Levracha, the 6th of Adar. So the neshama should have an aliyah. Okay. So if you go back to the psukim, right, go back to the text just so we can refresh our memory. We're looking at chapter 30, sentence 20, Perek Lamed Pasuk Chaf. We already saw that they beat Amalek and they brought back all of the people who had been taken captive, and they also had spoils from Amalek that Amalek had taken from the region when they had raided it. So Veikach David es kol atzon v'habakarno agu lifnei amiknehahu. David took all of the sheep and the cattle, and we talked about what exactly it means, nahagu lifnei amiknehahu. The people walked in front of all of the spoils, or it's giving us the, it's saying that, that their own animals were weaker and were vulnerable, so they went behind the animals that were taken from Amalek. We gave different explanations of what is in front of what. But the key point for us was the end of the sentence, Vayomru zeh shalal David, and they said, these are the spoils of David. Which, simple read, it's a cheer demonstrating everybody is supporting David. But then we also saw two other approaches, one from the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, that it's talking about the fields they're traveling through and saying that those fields are property of David. And that's, we explained within the view that a king is allowed to break through property and take a path for himself. We saw that Abarbanel did not like that because he said, you're in Plishti lands. I thought you could answer that. Nonetheless, Abarbanel gave a different approach and he said, it's talking about the spoils from Amalek and saying that the spoils belong to David and therefore their original owners, the people who Amalek took it from, have no means of objecting. This is now David's property, right? Everyone remembers that? We're good? Okay. So in sentence 21, we were told that David goes to the 200 men who did not go to the battle, the people he had put in Nachal Besor either to guard the implements or, as Abarbanel read it, to guard the crossing of the Wadi. And they came out to David, and David goes to them, and it says, Vayigash David es ha'am. David goes forth with the nation, which you could read in a couple of different ways, but some read it as David approaching them with warmth. David is going forward with these people he is greeting, and he asks, how are you? Vayishallah hem l'shalom. It's a friendly greeting. And again, if you take the view that they didn't go because they didn't want to go, that's kind of a surprising tack that David is taking, but he embraces them. And then we said, Vayan kol ish ra ubliyal meho anashim ashahochuim David, the bad people, the worthless people who had gone with David, they are not happy with David's warmth towards those people, and they say, these people aren't getting any of the spoils. They can take their wives, they can take their children, they should lead them away, and they used very coarse language. The same language used for leading an animal is the language that they use for these people. These people didn't come with us to fight, they're not getting any of the spoils. To which David replied, don't do that, my brothers. He's very soft in his speech. He says, don't do that. Whatever Hashem gave us, He protected us. So He's the one who defeated the army before us. And who would listen to you? The portion for those who went to war is the same as the portion for those who sat with the implements, those who sat with the property. And that became the rule from that day forward. So we gave one approach last time for why David was doing this. And that was, it was a logical thing to do. And this is the approach of Ralbag, Abarbanel, Malbim. these people who stayed behind deserve a share. Whether because the fighters don't deserve a share, they don't deserve an extra share, I should say, because after all, Hashem was the one who beat back the enemy, or because these people who stayed with the implements really did something useful. They, it isn't that they weren't helpful. They guarded the implements, which enabled everybody else to go. Or Malbim's rather surprising statement, they have greater merit by not going to war. They demonstrated faith in Hashem, that Hashem is going to take care of the battle. And therefore, we won. We won because of their emunah, because of their faith. So David says, you don't have a special right to it. They, on the other hand, do have a right to it. So therefore, we're going to split it evenly, and this is chok and mishpat, Malbim said. It sounds like a chok at first, like, why are you doing it this way? And then when David explains it, oh, okay, now I understand, it's actually mishpat, this is a just way to do things. And the last thing we did was a barbanel, pointing out that this is actually a lot like what Avram does with Aner Eshkol and Mamre, like the Medrash says, linking the two, because it said it was the practice, Mayayom Ahuva Mala. I'm not going to go into Barbanel's mathematics and the four shares that we did last time. Okay, questions and comments before we see a different way to read this. Janine.
You had mentioned that the land belonged to the Plishtim. Does that mean that the Jews were either not allowed or not commanded to take the land which belonged, or is it just not possible to take land at that point from the Plishtim? Why was that not?
Right. So I think I mentioned this way, way back. I think when we started on David being with the Plishtim, I think I mentioned it then. This land is identified in much of Tanakh until now as Eretz Plishtim, not as Eretz Canaan or Eretz Yisrael. The land that is the land of the seven nations, which is closer to the Yarden, is Eretz Canaan. Whereas the land in this region, Aza, Ashdod, Ashkelon, Gat, Ekron, that area is actually known as the land of the Plishtim, and even though it's in the boundary of what Hashem promises the Jews at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, it's not actually part of, so to speak, Eretz Yisrael in the Chumash. So you can find that in quite a few different places. The example that always comes to mind for me is the beginning of Parshas Chayei Sarah, when it says, "Vatama Sarah beKiryas Arba hi Chevron beEretz Kenan." Sarah died in Kiryat Arba, Chevron, Eretz Kenan. Vayavo Avraham lispod leSarah v'livkosa, and Avram came there because Avram was in Beersheva. Avram wasn't there. And if you read Rashi, and if you read Ramban there, they say explicitly that Sarah was in Hebron because she wanted to die in Eretz Canaan, which had Kedusha. She did not want to die in Beersheba, which did not have the Kedusha. So the question becomes, at what stage does Eretz Plishtim become Eretz Yisrael? And the argument...
So it sounds
right.
Like
right. So the answer seems to be David's wars are what make this into part of Eretz Yisrael. It's supposed to be part of Eretz Yisrael, and that's why it's not a problem for the Medrash that you mentioned about Yitzhak never leaving the land, because it is part of the land that's supposed to become Kadosh. But whereas Avraham in the land of Canaan becomes known, makes a name for himself, and takes title to it, right? The Chiti recognize Avraham, and he's a real power there. When Avraham comes to Gerar, and then when Yitzchak comes to Gerar as well, they get pushed around. They never really take control of that area. That's what the Medrash says Avraham was trying to do, and why he stayed in Beersheba, even as Sarah was dying in Hebron. Avram is trying to extend influence there. I have a shir on YU Torah about it, I think, a parsha shir about Chayei Sarah from some years ago, and you can see it discussed there. But that's what I would say. Susan, Ruth, and then Ricky.
When it says, Mi Yishmar Lachem, Adavar Hazeh.
Yeah.
First of all, I found it different than the tone of the rest of it. The rest of it was very humble, as they say in it. But
yeah.
That's more aggressive, and it doesn't seem
Yeah.
It kind of bothers me.
Yeah, and there, I didn't find much commentary on it either. It seems, you're right, it seems like what Dovid is effectively doing here is a little bit of there's a word for it, something like glove and an iron fist or something like that. There's something like that that I'm not quite thinking of, where on the one hand he's gentle with them, and on the other hand, this is the rule, this is what we're going to do, and stop arguing with me. You know, David is doing both, and I think that's what a melech needs to do. The
velvet,
okay. The I don't know, there's a term that I'm not quite remembering, but that's what I'm seeing. Ruth and then Ricky.
Okay, so you also
yeah. Oh, yeah. No, definitely. I agree with you. Ruth?
I was going to ask, were we required to capture the Eretz Plishtim like we were expected to conquer Canaan?
Right.
Does the same rules apply to Eretz Plishtim? And does it have the same Kedusha as the rest
right.
of the...
So it definitely has the same Kedusha. It's given as part of the entirety. In terms of whether it is, in terms of whether it has the same rules, because the people who live there are not Canaanim, you don't have the same rules that you have with the Amori, the Chiti, you know, and all of those. There is no mitzvah of getting rid of the, the Plishti society the way there is for the Canaanite society. Yeah.
So is food grown in Gaza Shemitah?
So that's actually a separate question. Meaning, from the standpoint of the Torah's boundaries, again, it's in. The reason it's a separate question is because when they come back for the second Beis HaMikdash, they don't take the land that's in Gaza. Or so it appears. And I gave Shir years ago. You can look on YU Torah. You'll see that also. Shemitah, look up Shemitah and Boundaries of Israel. And we discussed there which land was taken and which land was not, and which land has full Kedusha and which one, and which does not. And there is discussion about that there. Okay. We were up to Ricky, I think.
This is a question that sounds more like one of my colleagues. I won't mention her name, but when David takes all the spoils, you said that the people who owned the property, his soldiers, don't have any claim on it. That seems quite unfair.
No, I said that the people who it was taken from originally, Amalek took the property from Negev HaKreti. David took it from Amalek. The people who originally owned it, these people, the Kreti he took it from, who are Plishtim, have no claim to it because David got it off of the of Amalek.
What about all the son and all the belongings of his soldiers that lived in?
That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the new stuff. We're not talking about the old stuff.
Okay, so are they going to get back their property?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So this was all one approach. Within this approach, it's just and fair that you split it this way. Those who are opposing it are Belial. They're people who are bad. They're people who are saying we don't want to give other people what they have the right to. We hold it against them. That's the school of thought that we presented last week. However, I want to show you a different approach that's consistent with something that we've pointed out before. David is a Baal Chesed, a person of Chesed. And that's what's going on in our story here. What David is doing, giving this to the people who didn't fight, is a really nice thing to do. You know, compare it to the precedent that we have in the Torah. Abarbanel fought on Ner Eshkol, Mamre didn't fight. We read that last week. However, the simple read in Bereishis, in Parshas Lech Lecha, is that Aner Eshkol Mamre did fight, and they received a portion because they were fighters, not because they were guarding Avraham's property. That's number one. Number two, we have a second precedent for division of the property, which we didn't discuss last week, but I think we're going to, yes, we are going to discuss it this week. I gave you a reference to it on the sheet in source number 4, which is where we're going to get to it. But right now I'll just tell you, the Jews fight a war against Midian towards the end of the book of Bamidbar, and afterwards they split the spoils between the army and the nation. But the way it works is that there are 12,000 soldiers who go to battle, 1,000 per shevet, 1,000 per tribe. They get 50%. And then the rest of the nation gets the other 50%. So there's a much larger percentage that's going to the army in that story. Compared to what everybody else gets. Or so let me say it the other way around. In the story in Midian, each individual citizen gets a lot less, a much smaller portion, than David is providing. So David is really performing a chesed. He's doing something nice. It's not something that they deserve. If you compare it to Aner Eshkol Mamre, they fought. You compare it in Midian, the people got a much smaller percentage. In my mind, even though Malbim says it's chok and it's mishpat, I don't think that there's a logic to it. I think it's chesed, and it fits our vision of David overall. We've talked about David's embrace of chesed before, right? We talked about it in the parak with Naval, and I gave you on the sheet a list of examples that we talked about back then. But you know, when we did that, I noted for you. Before we see the list, actually, Rav Bazak makes the point that we put the story of David in the beginning of Shmuel Beis. Sorry, let me do this a little bit differently. I'm looking at my notes and realizing I should have done it in a little bit of a different order. I think the way I'm going to do it is this. David's origins. Who is David's great grandmother? Ruth, right? Who we credit as the mother of this dynasty that leads to Mashiach and a major influence, right? Those of you who are learning Mishlei with me on Tuesdays, we're going to be talking about Esh Eschayil and how the Esh Eschayil poem can be seen as modeled on Ruth. It's really about her. So keeping that in mind, Megillas Rus is all about Chesed. Ruth is all about chesed. The chesed that she does for Naomi is what drives the whole story. So that chesed influences David. And now you can take a look at the sheet, at the table that I gave you, or the list I gave you in source number 1. We see that David takes care of the people of Yavesh Gilad. The people of Yavesh Gilad have a special relationship with Shaul that goes back to chapter 11 of Shmuel Aleph, when Shaul saved them from Nachash, king of Ammon. So the people of Yavesh Gilad bury the body of Shaul at risk to themselves, and David comes to them and he says, I am going to take care of you. Yavesh Gilad is really its own drama. If you remember the story of Pelegish Begiva, there's a lot to say about Yavesh Gilad. Then you go ahead in the story to Shmuel Bet chapter 9, and you find that Yehonatan, David's friend, had a son named Mephibosheth, and David employs Chesed to take care of Mephibosheth. And then in the chapter after that, the king of Ammon dies, and David wants to comfort his son, and he sends a delegation to be Menachem to offer him comfort in response to a chesed that the king of Ammon had done for him. That's a story maybe one day we'll get to learn. And then further along, after the revolt of Avshalom against his father David, there's a fellow named Barzillai who helps David, and David says, I have to reward him for his chesed. And in the book of Malachim, he orders Shlomo to take care of the sons of Barzillai. David is somebody who engages in chesed, he rewards chesed, and David is offended by anti-chesed acts. We talked about this with Naval, where he would not help, but also after the story with Bathsheba, which, you know, is a long way off. But after the story with Bathsheba, remember that the prophet Nathan comes to rebuke David, and he tells him a parable about a wealthy man who takes advantage of his pauper who is a neighbor, and David wants him killed for what he did, because David just can't stomach that kind of conduct. And I sum it up for you in source number 2, which credits David with saying that in order to be a Jew, one needs 3 traits. One must be Rachman, merciful, Baishan, bashful, and Gomel Chesed, to be generous. This is David's definition of what it means to be a Jew. So my argument is that's what David is doing here. It's not about what the people who didn't fight deserve. It's what David wants done as an act of kindness to them. So naturally, you might ask, Ruth, I'm not taking questions yet. You might then ask, why are the people who don't want to engage in chesed called Belial? Right? You call them ra. You call them bad people. You say they have no value. Belial means somebody of no worth. What do I do with that? And the answer is, I look at the way the word Belial is used in the Torah. The word Belial is often somebody who refuses to engage in chesed. If you take a look at your sheet at source number 3, I gave you specific references. It isn't true of every appearance of Belial, but take a look. All right, thanks for the note in the chat. That's very funny. Now I have to figure out how to see it. There we go. Yes, Nathan rebuking David happens to be today's Perek in 929, for those who are going through that way. Okay, so in source number 3, I gave you references. The first reference is from the Torah with the mitzvah of Shmitas Ksafim, canceling debts during the sabbatical year. And it says, be very careful lest there be a thought in your heart, Belial, to say, the sabbatical year is coming, I don't want to extend loans because those loans are going to be forgiven. So that's an example of Belial being somebody who refuses to help somebody else, who refuses to act with chesed. I then gave you 2 references from Shoftim, chapter 19, chapter 20, in which the people of the city of Giv'ah, who are horrified by there being guests in Giv'ah, and they want to abuse the guests, are called Belial. They don't believe in chesed. And then you turn to the beginning of Shmuel, chapter 2, sentence 12, and we get the story of Hophni and Pinchas, who are selfish, who take from the sacrifices for themselves. And guess what they're called? Belial. And then, in the story with Naval, this man who refuses to engage in chesed, as I referenced here on your sheet, twice Naval is called Belial. So Belial can be a term for people who don't want to engage in chesed. Now, this doesn't necessarily help us with the word ra, right? Ra we think of as bad. I get it. It also doesn't work for all Belial cases. Sometimes Belial refers to idolatry. I'm not interested in trying to force something and say all Belial revolves around chesed. Only to say it can be consistent with this being about chesed. You follow? That's what I'm trying to get across. Ruth, you had a question. You mean to keep the 200 happy, but at the expense of losing the 400. Who do I want to keep it happy? If I have a choice between 200 and 400, between those who didn't fight and those who did, I'm going to try to satisfy the ones who fight, especially when they're the majority. Yeah, I'm not so sure I would vote that way. Janine.
Not to take away from David, because he obviously wanted the men to perform chesed, but this is chesed not at his expense. It's at the expense of the people that deserve, that by rights should have had the...
Yes and no. First of all, again, he is endangering his standing with those people. And I think that's something in and of itself. He's trying to teach them effectively chesed and endangering himself to do so. He's being a leader. Yeah. And also, at the end of the chapter, we're not going to do it this week. We'll do it, God willing, next Thursday. We're going to see David sending around spoils, and I'm not sure whose spoils David is sending. But we'll see. He's going to send spoils to other cities in Yehuda. I wonder how that plays into what we're talking about here. Last thought on this, unless there were other comments and questions. No? Okay. So with both approaches in mind, I want to look at the story with Midian that I referenced before. You remember the story. At the end of Parshas Balak, the Midianites come up with a strategy to lure the Jews away from God, right? Instead of the hostility of hiring Bilaam to curse the Jews, they say, we have a different tack. They lure the Jews, specifically the Midianite women come out, whether it's Midianite women, Moabite women, are they all the same? A good discussion for Parshas Balak. But they lure the Jewish men into a relationship with them that includes worship of Peor. The Jews go to war against Midian. And here I refer you to what I referenced in source number 4, Bamidbar, chapter 31, sentence 25. Okay, everyone hopefully who has a Tanakh is able to flip to that. It's worth seeing the text inside. So, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe Lemor. Hashem says to Moshe, Sa eis rosh malkoach hashvi ba'adamu va'behema. You should count up all of the loot that's been taken, the people, the animals, you, Elazar, the leaders of the community, and v'chatzisa as hamalkoach, divide up the spoils between tofsei ha-milchama ha-yotzi'im la-tzava, those who actually went to war, and the rest of the nation. And v'harei mosa meches la-shem, let's not forget, there will be a tithe that you're going to give to God as well. From the warriors, it'll be one out of every 500. Whereas, from the rest of the nation, you are going to take one out of 50. In other words, you take a greater percentage from the nation then you take from the warriors, but the warriors who are 12,000 are going to get 50%. The nation is going to get 50%, right? Clear? In terms of what they do with the people who they've taken, the whole issue of being an eved and all the prisoners of war—that's a great discussion, but not for right now. Okay, so here's my question to you. Last week we saw a Medrash. The Medrash pointed out that the text says this was the practice, Mehayom Hahu Vamala, from that day upward. And the Medrash said if you wanted to say from that day onward, you should have said Mehayom Vahahu Vahala, from that day forward. You didn't. You said from that day upward. That means that there was a precedent in the past for this practice. And the Medrash pointed, as we said, to Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre, Avram giving them spoils. Why didn't the Medrash refer to this story? Why didn't the Medrash reference 50% goes to the fighters, 50% goes to everybody else? That should have been mentioned in the Medrash. The truth is, there is a different Medrash in Psikta Zutrata that does. But our Medrash, which is, you know, a more dominant version, Psikta Zutrata, is not nearly as well learned as the Medrash that we saw last week, which I am just looking it up to make sure I'm remembering correctly where it was. Where did I do it? Yeah, Bereishis Rabbah, chapter 43. So why didn't our Medrash mention the story in with Midian? So Abarbanel says, I'll tell you why. I believe, says Abarbanel, that this was a matter of justice, not a matter of chesed. It's not a matter of kindness. It's a matter of justice. And he says, with that perspective, that the story with Midian is not a story of justice. Take a look at source number 5. He says, Ha'achas, first of all, Lefisha, you know what, there's a lot of text. I'm just going to read out my English translation, but you can see the original Hebrew as well. First, because the men who went to Midian did not go on their own, these soldiers. They went as agents of all of the tribes in their name. This was because all Israel was harmed by Midian twice over for their sins. That phrase is a phrase from elsewhere, which I'm not going to go into, but Midian had harmed the entire nation. And God said each tribe should send. And because they went in the name of all of the tribes, and as their agents, 1,000 per tribe for all the tribes of Israel, it was fitting that the collected materials be associated with all of them. What Abarbanel is saying is, in Midian, the non-warriors have a greater claim to a share than they do with David. In Midian, the soldiers really are representing everybody. But with David, when each individual went to save his wife and children, and aside from saving them, Hashem, their God, placed before them great spoils, they said that it would be enough that those men who were not endangered and didn't go to battle should take their wives and children, the rest of the spoils, which they did not intend and for which they did not endanger themselves. They should not receive any of that. That's number one. Number two, he says, when you look at the story in Midian, Hashem never says this is going to be the rule for all time. The second reason was that they saw that in the war with Midian, Hashem commanded, you shall divide up what you collected. He did not say that this should be an eternal statute for all their generations. Of course, neither did Avraham. But he says that's another reason why we don't look to that as precedent. And then third, he says, and we've already noticed this, the per capita share that David gives the non-warriors is greater than the per capita share that they got in Midian. He says, the third reason was, for Hashem commanded in Midian, you shall split the spoils between those who battle, who go out to the army, and the entire nation. The portion of the 12,000 soldiers who went upon Midian was the same as the share of the entire nation, who were 600,000. And it's not even 600,000, 600,000 men of military age. But David did not do this. But rather, they divided evenly. The portion of the one who went to war was the same as the portion of the one who sat with the implements. They split together. Because the nation there did not sit with the implements and did not help with the war at all. And so it would not have been right that they split together with the soldiers. What was given to them was beyond the law. So he says, you can't compare the two. What happened in Midian is not the same as what happens with David. This is Abarbanel seeing everything as about justice. In the case with Midian, it's not the same as the case here. In the case in Midian, the non-warriors deserve a share even more. In the case in Midian, it was not decreed by God to be the law. In the case in Midian, the soldiers received a much larger per capita share than the rest. But I think if you take my explanation that this is really about chesed, the answer for why you didn't mention is Midian is clear. Because in Midian, it was God's command. Hashem said, do it. The point here is that it's David's own chesed initiative. It's not an obligation until David makes it one. So you're not going to invoke Midian where you didn't have a choice. Hashem said, do it. It's an entirely different act. What David is doing is a personal act of generosity. What they did in Midian was, you know, Torah. This is what Hashem said to do. You follow. I hope. Okay? Good. So what we'll have to do next time, God willing, is wrap up this chapter, do review questions, and then launch into chapter 31, the last chapter in Shmuel Aleph. We also need to have a discussion about how this chapter highlights David's leadership style versus Shaul's style. I'll also note, because someone asked me the question this week, not this coming week, but the following one is Purim, God willing. It's on a Tuesday, March 7th. I do hope to have a shiur on Thursday, March 9th. I don't know how long it will be. It may be shorter than regular because I don't know how much time I'm going to have to prepare it that week. Maybe it'll be a pre-Pesach shiur. Who knows? But that'll be, God willing, March 9th. I do expect to have a shiur. I just don't know exactly what it'll be. Susan, you were going to ask a question about this?
This is a fun question. Are we going to have a shiur when we finally finish?
I would hope so. And I hope it's not on Zoom. Okay. Okay, so let's switch over to Purim as a topic.